Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this episode, how reducing risks for private investors could help Africa build the infrastructure it so desperately needs.
In fact, that is a smart way to use development aid as well, because you only use a fraction to lower the risk in a project, but then you attract more in terms of private sector investment, then everyone wins, development happens.
While Africa's infrastructure needs are daunting for many countries with limited resources, Mthuli Ngube says the private sector could do more towards filling that gap if the conditions were right. Ngube is the managing director of Quantum Global Research Lab and co-editor of Infrastructure in Africa, Lessons for Future Development. First, before we get into this, define what an infrastructure gap is.
An infrastructure gap, basically, is the unfunded or uninvested infrastructure that needs to be, you know, developed in order to support the current level of economic growth or economic activity in a country.
And so is this so-called infrastructure gap bigger in Africa than it is in other regions?
It is bigger in Africa, not in size, but as a proportion or a percentage of the size of the African economies. It is certainly bigger than in other regions.
And why is that?
Because Africa has suffered a few constraints. It's a constraint of resources in terms of, you know, the money is available to invest in this infrastructure. It's got to do with some of the instability that some of the African countries have gone through. There are a variety of reasons why the investment required in infrastructure has not taken place, and that has kept this gap open for far too long.
And so what types of infrastructure is Africa lacking the most?
I would say it's a variety of infrastructure, but it's mainly around power infrastructure. You have quite a lot of power outages because of unstable power supply, and also the way this is transmitted to end users, that is also a challenge. You've got gaps as well in transportation infrastructure. If you go to almost in any capital city in Africa, you'll be struck by the congestion in the capital cities. That says something about perhaps the availability of infrastructure around cities, but also across regions within the same country. You also still have gaps as well in information technology sector, the so-called ICT sector. Of course, Africa has made great strides in mobile telephony. In fact, it leapfrogged that sector completely. But there are still gaps that they still need to be filled. There are also gaps in the area of water and sanitation. And that is not an easy sector to invest in terms of private sector investment. You know, in water is usually seen as a right. Sanitation, somewhat as well, very similar to being a right. So it's not very easy to invest in that sector where people believe that it is their right and therefore shouldn't even pay for it. So there are gaps right across all infrastructure, and those are some of the challenges we are facing.
And you use several examples in your book as to how, you know, fairly small projects can stimulate local economies. And there's one in particular that you spoke of that struck me as interesting, and that is the road that was built between Kigali and Burundi. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a road built within the last 10 years, which has really transformed that part of Rwanda. And that's when you realize that a road is not just a simple road. In a rural area, a tarred road is in fact an economy. It can reduce poverty, especially if you have feeder roads. It helps farmers get to the market. Even school children can get faster to school. Mothers can get to clinics. Besides, I mean, you're talking about two countries. You've got trade taking place between those countries. So a road can transform a whole region. And in fact, you have small cities and settlement sprouting up all along the road. Why? Because that movement of traffic is creating economic activity. So infrastructure should not be just be seen as a nice to have, something that just reduces the cost of doing business. It is an economy that can change people's lives. It is an economy that can transform the poverty profile of regions, of poor regions in Africa.
So there's obviously a huge need for a lot of big projects in Africa. But given, you know, the current state of the economy in many of these countries with falling revenues and rising debt, how are they expected to finance these huge projects?
The gap left by dwindling or you know, resources of the state, of governments, because of debt or low growth, that gap needs to be filled by the private sector. So what we really need to figure out is how we can attract more private sector funding in infrastructure. There are certain ways to do that. One of them is through what you call public-private partnerships, PPPs, which is what happens is that, you know, the government gives a concession to a private sector company to build a road, you know, and operate that road over, let's say, a 30-year period. And in return, the private company is able to levy tariffs for the use of the road and be able to recoup the cost of deploying that asset, building that infrastructure. A simple PPP arrangement. Then after 30 years or whatever, 25 years concession, it is given back to the government. It's transferred to the government. It could be something like that. So that's one way to crowd in the private sector. But there are many other ways. You see, if you look at pension funds, there's a lot of money also in the pension fund sector within Africa and globally. How do you bring pension funds in? I think there's work that needs to be done in creating instrument and securities that are easy for pension funds to invest in. You know, up is very critical because without that, they're not going to put their money in a road, in a power station without being able to put a value on their investments or being able to sell out and cash out whenever they need to. So creating the instruments that allow that to happen is key to crowding in the private sector. Another way is to reduce the risks that the private sector is exposed to in some of these projects. Some of those risks, for instance, pertain to currency fluctuation, what is called exchange rate risk in economics. Some of it just pertains to just simple political exposure risk. You know, politics going wrong, you lose all your money, you lose all your investment. That risk can be insured. And this is where, you know, countries or project promoters can buy insurance from an institution like the World Bank, for example, and other institutions from even the private insurance market, and then be able to lower the risk in those projects. And then that allows the private sector to come in and realize the right levels of return for their investment.
Hmm. And as you just mentioned, I mean, there is a level of politics involved in infrastructure investments oftentimes. And if you're trying to draw in the private sector, there are issues of corruption and transparency and governance issues. How does one sort of gain the confidence of the private sector in countries where there has been a history of corruption?
Well, I think that the one way to do this is to have very well-resourced, what you call public-private partnership units within governments, which are staffed by the best people. There's need to build capacity in those PPP units. Of course, corruption is not very easy to fight, but again, there's no substitute for creating an environment where you have the right professionals working there. This is governed by documentation and all of that. People who know how to negotiate these concessions, negotiate effectively. But of course, companies, private investors should say no to corruption. They should not accept it. That's very important. Send a very clear message. In fact, maybe that's one way to stop it, actually, is not to play ball when it comes to corruption.
What is the role of the international community in Africa's infrastructure development? I mean, some would argue that the track record has not been very good. You know, they seem to be struggling or wrestling with the same problems that they were 10, 20, 30 years ago.
I think that the international community is doing its best, but we just need to rethink certain, you know, approaches to intervening in this infrastructure deficit resolution. First of all, looking at the cycle of infrastructure development, starting with the preparation of the projects themselves, making them more bankable, more investable in by investors. The international community has a role to play there because there isn't a lot of capital around the world which is available for project preparation, because it feels like you're throwing away money. You spend $20 million or $100 million just preparing the documentation, viability of a project. You have to pay lawyers, pay this and that, accountants and so forth. This is where the international community could play a role, working with the international development banks to create a project preparation pool of resources. Secondly, the international community can also play a role in reducing the risk in the projects which I mentioned earlier. This could be the donor community, in terms of ODA, overseas aid. It could be the multilateral development banks themselves, bilateral development banks. And here, some of these risks could be, let's say, we say currency risk, for instance, risk of currency fluctuations, where they could hedge, to use an economics term, or insulate the project from that kind of risk. They could play that role. In fact, that is a smart way to use development aid as well, because you only use a fraction to lower the risk in a project, but then you attract more in terms of private sector investment. Then everyone wins, development happens. You know? The other areas of intervention could be in building the capacity of the governments to negotiate better deals in some of these investments, the capacity of these public-private partnership units. This is where, again, African government needs support in building that capacity, and the international community can be helpful here. I'm delighted to learn about this G20 Partnership with Africa initiative. The largest 20 countries in the world in terms of economic size, you know, wanting to do more, to crowd in, to bring in the private sector into infrastructure in regions like Africa. This is really welcome, and it's one example as to how the global community is trying to, what it is trying to do in helping Africa develop its infrastructure.
That was Mthuli Ngubane, Managing Director of Quantum Global Research Lab and Visiting Professor at Oxford University. Infrastructure in Africa, Lessons for Future Development is published by Policy Press, University of Bristol. To find out more about the IMF and public investment management, go to imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts.